Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app, or at whatwasthatlike.com.
This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Please take care of yourself.
Episode 214. Bienvenidos, bitches, and Buiti Binafi, bitches. Thanks for listening. Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and those who are othered, and the victims, because contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are straight cisgender white dudes.
What?
Yeah, isn't it wild? Now, these crimes rarely get any public attention, and that is because the news is... wait for it. Hold for applause. Racist, allegedly. Put your hands down.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy, a Black Latinx woman. And I'm Beth, and I just happen to be white.
That's right. She is a nice white lady, you guys. Very nice white lady.
Can't help it. We're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists. Just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions.
All right, so who are we talking about today, friend?
Well, we have a special Thanksgiving episode for y'all today.
Ooh.
This is the story of Asmiram Gebreselassie and Tewodros Gebreselassie, two brothers who murdered three people on Thanksgiving Day in 2006.
Okay, but before we get into the details, how you doing?
I'm doing good. As I mentioned, this is a special Thanksgiving episode. So it's going to drop on Thanksgiving, so I wanted
Thanksgiving is a Thursday. Okay.
Yeah, it's a Thursday, yep.
Yeah, okay.
Always, every year.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is crazy.
I got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lambs, grams, hogs, logs, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chickens, turkeys, you name it! That's my Thanksgiving Shirley Caesar impression. And I love, that's basically the only thing I like about this time of year. But anyway, back to the script.
So I wanted to take a moment to say happy Thanksgiving to all of our fruities. And to say that we are so, so thankful for you.
We are. Don't forget about the horrific history of this holiday that we celebrate. And to, you know, do some acknowledging and reflecting on the OGs of America, the indigenous people. My daughter is third grade studying social studies.
Oh, geez.
And I was like, this paper doesn't say anything about genocide. Nothing about diseases or murder or rape. What is this? What's your teacher's email? Because I need to speak with that woman. Anyway, yeah, no, but doing good. Thanksgiving is almost here, and happy Thanksgiving to you all. Feliz Pascua. Feliz Dia de Gracias. I don't know how to say it in Garifuna, but you get my drift.
Yeah.
So let's get into some listener letters.
All right. Hello, angels.
Hello. What is in the bag, Beth?
Well, I don't have anything. Do you?
I do. Something did come up.
Oh, okay.
My eyeballs.
Cool.
It was a DM on the platform formerly known as Twitter.
Okay.
We got a DM from Kinty for News. Kinty for News.
That's something else.
It might be. It might be. I don't know, but I don't want to assume because that makes an ass out of you and me. Am I right?
Yeah.
So,
but I hope it does.
It's one of my favorite words. Anyway, let's get into her. The letter says, "Good morning, Fruit Loops Queenies. Just wanted to present another case to y'all that I have been following since I heard about her murder in 2019. Mm. I'm queer and from Dallas, so her loss was a huge cloud over Dallas Pride that year. The man that killed her assaulted her first on video months prior and went on a killing spree within the same week he murdered her. And she says, you all do an excellent job at presenting the lives of the victims as much as the perp, and it makes me proud to be a listener. Thank you again for all the work that you guys do. And thank you, Kinty4News, so much.
Yeah, thank you.
For your letter. And the case she's talking about, y'all, is Malaysia Booker.
Yeah.
Black trans woman who we've been following the case, too.
Yeah.
And there was just a conviction and a sentence.
We'll be covering this case. Yeah.
This one to the docket. And thank you so much for your letter. It was so sweet.
Yeah, thank you. And I just wanted to say, please send any questions or comments to FruitloopsPod@gmail.com. Or leave us a voicemail at
602-935-6294.
And we may feature it on a future episode. Also, join us on Patreon, where we have literally hundreds of hours of bonus content. And we have a video club for 12-plus patrons where you can interact with us in person.
That's right. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll get into the story when we come back.
I got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, rice, coleslaw. Beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chicken, turkeys, rabbit.
You name it.
Beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, rice, coleslaw. Beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chicken, turkeys. Beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes. Beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes.
You name it. You name it. You name it. You name it. You name it.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right, so let's talk about batteries, specifically social batteries.
Okay.
Now, during the winter, you know, like my battery was like really drained and I really just couldn't wait for it to be over. And now that winter is gone, I am feeling more energized socially. So
nice.
I can manage having friends over at my house and going out to do things. But I have to do a lot of mental preparing.
Yeah.
And then I also have to have time to recover from the people and the things.
Oh, yeah. I get that. And I know there are people out there who are energized and even thrive on being around people.
Yeah.
But I am definitely not one of those people.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. The thing is, you know, sometimes our batteries can get drained when we say yes to all the things and to all the people. And we forget to, you know, set boundaries and set aside time and space for ourselves.
Everyone's different.
Right.
And the good news is that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I definitely had many sessions with my therapist about boundaries and positive coping skills. And therapy is, dare I say, empowering.
Yeah.
And it can help you become the bestest version of yourself and can help you determine when your battery is beyond depleted or needs a refresher.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/fruit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's Better, HELP.com/fruit.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande, the host of True Crime Psychology and Personality. On my podcast, I explore and explain the pathology behind some of the most horrendous crimes and those who commit them. We discuss topics like narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, and antisocial personality disorder from a scientifically informed perspective. What is a narcissist? How do you spot a sociopath? What signs can you look for to protect yourself from these dangerous personalities? It's not just about the stories, but also the science and psychology behind them. So if you're interested in true crime or mental health, I'd encourage you to give my show a listen wherever you get podcasts.
We're back! Remind us, Beth, who is our subject today?
Well, on Thanksgiving Day in 2006, two brothers, Asmaram Gebrselassie and Tuadros Gebrselassie, murdered three people in Oakland, California.
Ooh, Oaktown. All right. This is our love and light section where we say our respects, give reverence to the people who lost their lives in this tragedy, and also lift up the communities, the loved ones who are left behind in the wake of this case. The murder victims are Wyntom Mehari, 28, her brother, Jonas Mehari, 17, and the Mehari's mother, 50-year-old Regbi Barangasi. And so rest in power to all of those souls.
Yeah.
So now we're going to get into the setting because context matters. And if you don't like history or knowing how we got here, please feel free to fast forward.
Yeah.
Take us there, Beth, to the setting. To the setting cave.
Quick.
Yeah.
So the setting is the country of Ethiopia and Oakland, California. Sounds like very far apart.
Very far apart. The biggity-biggity-o. Yes. But when I was growing up in the Bay, Oaktown, San Ho, there was so many Ethiopian people from the Ethiopian community. And so...
Yes. It's very interesting how that came to be.
Yes. Are we going to talk about it?
We are. Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is why that is important. Context, y'all. Context, y'all.
So Ethiopia is a landlocked country in Eastern Africa, located on the Horn of Africa. It is bordered by Eritrea to the north, Djibouti to the east, Kenya to the south, and Sudan to the west. It is roughly the size of Texas.
Also, just real quick before we go on, just lifting up those places like Sudan and the Tigray people in the countries of Africa and the Congo, there's turmoil and violence going on. So just lifting those places up.
Yeah.
But Ethiopia, formerly known as Abyssinia, is one of the world's oldest countries. It is Africa's oldest independent country. And it's the second largest in terms of population. This is my favorite fact about Ethiopia of all time. It was never colonized. What? I mean, there was some Italians who occupied it during World War II. But as far as I'm concerned, Ethiopia was never colonized. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
But the occupation of the Italians, they were only there for a few years. The occupation did not result in any lasting colonial administration. Thank God.
So Ethiopia is a patriarchal society with status largely determined by one's class and ethnicity. Regardless of class and ethnicity, however, Ethiopians view women as subservient to men. Women generally have less access to education and fewer economic opportunities in Ethiopia.
Also, according to the 2007 Pew Global Attitudes Project, 97% of Ethiopians believe homosexuality is a way of life that society should not accept. And this was the second highest rate of non-acceptance in the 45 countries surveyed. That's interesting.
So that number is staggering, 97%, when you consider that 10% of people in general are gay. They just are.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
97%, so that's got to include some gay people.
Sure. And
yeah,
this is in my takes, but there is not a space in this world where there are not queer people. There's black queer people, Ethiopian queer people.
Biological.
Cute people with disabilities.
There's 10%
in nature. Exactly.
Yeah, communities are around 10% are going to be gay.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I was just thinking about the spectrum. What about people who are not all one thing, right? Or don't particularly have it's a spectrum, right?
So yeah, non-binary or trans or, you know, all the things. Yeah.
So I would think that the percentage would be even higher if people were, you know, being honest and including everyone.
You mean the percentage of people who are gay?
Yeah. Or LGBTQ. Yeah.
Right, right. Gotcha.
Gay is just the G part. Anyway, also 2007 was not a long time ago, but it was a while ago.
It was a while ago, yeah.
I mean, that's before the marriage equality.
It's actually gotten worse.
It has?
It's actually gotten worse in Ethiopia. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, what was I saying? I don't know.
My thought is that 97% it has to include the LGBTQ community. And I think the reason why is because the attitude is so strong that they feel like there's something wrong with them. And that's sad.
That is really sad.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. But this was the second highest rate of non-acceptance in the 45 countries surveyed.
So Ethiopia criminalizes same-sex sexual activity, and sentences include a maximum penalty of 1 year imprisonment. And there is some evidence of the law being enforced in recent years, although it's hard to get that information.
Mm, that's interesting. Also, you know, persecution because of your sexual identity, I would think, would be a reason to seek asylum somewhere else.
Yep.
LGBTQ people face high levels of discrimination, including in employment and education, and are vulnerable to violence and ostracism if their identities are discovered. As a result, there is no visible LGBTQ community. It remains underground.
Earlier this year, in the capital city, Addis Ababa, the police department launched a hotline for reporting, quote, illegal activities that deviate from the law and social values, unquote.
Mm.
Yeah. And in August of this year, the Ethiopian government began a crackdown on hotels, pubs, bars, and restaurants for alleged homosexual activities.
Also in this year, the Ethiopian LGBTQ community faced an aggressive wave of online harassment and physical violence. And much of the blame is being placed on some Ethiopian TikTokers who are outing people, and inciting violence against the LGBTQ community. Many in the LGBTQ community have chosen to flee the country.
So yeah, that's all pretty scary.
Mm-hmm. Terrifying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1970s and 80s, facing political unrest during the Ethiopian Civil War, as well as war, famine, and natural disasters, large waves of Ethiopians began immigrating to the United States.
Ethiopia is majority Christian at approximately 67%, followed by Islam at approximately 31%. There's a longstanding but smaller Ethiopian Jewish community. The majority of Ethiopians admitted to the U.S. were Christian because they were considered the best candidates to easily assimilate into American culture.
However, the main factor for determining admission was educational background. The majority were male because the social structure in Ethiopia enabled men to meet the educational and occupational requirements established by the U.S. government for admittance.
Ethiopians have gravitated to and have had the greatest success in regions in the United States already heavily populated by Black people, and where previous generations of Ethiopians had established communities.
Oakland is a large port city in the state of California located in the San Francisco Bay. It is the third largest city in the San Francisco Bay Area and the eighth largest city in California.
Whoa!
Yeah, yeah. The Ohlone people were the original inhabitants of the area.
The biggity biggity O. That's what they call Oakland in rap songs. In 1772, conquistadors from New Spain claimed Oakland and other Ohlone lands of the East Bay for the King of España, Spain. When Mexico gained its independence from Spain, California became Mexican territory. In 1850, after the Mexican-American War, California was admitted into the United States.
Today, Oakland, or what did you call it?
Biggity, biggity, the biggity, biggity-o. Yeah.
Today, Oakland is one of the most ethnically diverse major cities in the United States. Mm-hmm. It has become a center for the Black population of Northern California, although it has lost nearly 25% of its Black community since 2000, with many leaving for the Southern U.S. or the Bay Area suburbs.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten so expensive. I think part of that is its proximity to Silicon Valley, too.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Oakland also has the third highest concentration of gay and lesbian people among the 50 largest cities in the country, after San Francisco and Seattle. The Ethiopian population in the Bay Area is one of the largest in the country and is estimated to be in the tens of thousands, with large communities in cities like Oaktown, or Oakland, and San Jose. The biggity biggity O. And San Jose.
There is an Ethiopian community center in Oakland, and the largest community event, the annual Ethiopian New Year Festival, can draw as many as 40,000 people from Oakland, San Francisco, and San Jose.
Tight. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Do you remember before we went to go see Hamilton for this?
We went to that Ethiopian restaurant. Yeah.
I'm just so thinking good. About the food is so good. Okay, well, now we're going to get into the Gebre Selassie brothers' early life. So Asmeron and Tuodros Gebre Selassie are two of 11 siblings. The family includes six brothers and three sisters. Asmeron, the second oldest, left Ethiopia as a young man in the early 80s and settled with relatives in Oaktown in 1985. That's Oakland. He later helped his brother Abraham emigrate to the United States, followed eventually by their mother and the rest of the siblings.
Abraham met his wife, Winta Mahari, during a vacation in Ethiopia in 1998. Their son Isaac was born in 2004. The Gebre Selassie family helped Winta's brothers, Merhawi and Angusam, their twins, Jonas and Yephiram, and their mother, Regbi, emigrate to the United States.
And that's emigrate with an E. With the exception of Winta, Abraham and Isaac, who lived in Berkeley, the Gebre Selassies and the Maharis lived in the same apartment complex in North Oakland. The two families were very close, like one really big family.
That's kind of cool.
It's amazing. Amazing. Yeah. To sort of have roots and community away from your homeland, right?
Yeah.
That, I think, is a beautiful thing.
Just all living in the same apartment complex.
Yeah. Can I have some sugar? Great. Thank you.
So Angusam Mahari described the Gebre Selassie matriarch as, quote, almost like a mother, unquote, and her children like his own brothers and sisters. Angusam and Merhawi, the twins, viewed Abraham like a father or brother. The two families frequently socialized together and shared holidays, birthdays, and family dinners together.
That is, sounds lovely. Well, let's get into the timeline where things take a turn.
Mm.
In the early morning of March 1st, 2006, Abraham, a seemingly healthy 42-year-old man, suddenly fell ill and died. Winta called 911, reporting that her husband was not breathing, then called her family and the Gebre Selassies.
An autopsy conducted by pathologist Thomas Rogers was inconclusive. A toxicology screen for prescription and street drugs was negative, and there was no evidence of foul play. It was ruled an unexplained natural death.
So, suspicious about their brother's sudden death, Asmeram and another brother, Tesfu, met with police to discuss their belief that Winta had a hand in it. Police reviewed the autopsy report and the 911 reports and interviewed Winta. Dr. Rogers as well was interviewed. A second pathologist, the Gebre Selassies, had retained to review Dr. Rogers' report, was contacted, and a supervising investigator with the coroner's office. That sounds like a lot of people to look into.
A lot of people, yeah. They all looked into it. And then on August 11th, an investigator told Asmeram and Tesfu that Abraham's death did not appear to be a homicide and that the police department did not intend to further investigate. But Asmeram did not buy it.
He just could not accept that.
No.
He believed the Meharis killed Abraham and that they had two motives for murdering him. He believed that Merhawi Mahari was gay and that the family wanted to prevent Abraham from disclosing this information.
I don't know about that one.
Okay.
He also believed that the family wanted to collect on Abraham's life insurance policy. Asmeram continued to urge police and the insurance company to investigate his brother's death, and he repeatedly confronted the Mahari family.
Okay, so this bruh is, he's just not chilling. He just won't let it go.
No.
Despite evidence to refute his theories. Twice in the late summer or fall, he went to their apartment and questioned Winta's mother and brothers about the night Abraham died. So, like a lamp and a desk, you know, yelling at them. Where were you on the night of?
Lights shining in their eyes.
Exactly. Yeah, like, whoa, I thought we were here for Thanksgiving. And accused the Mehari family of murdering Abraham. Alarmed by these confrontations, the family decided that Asmaram was no longer welcome in their home and agreed to lock the door and call the police if he returned. Smart.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm an American vigilante. I have a question for you. What would you do if someone you cared about was abducted, taken from you? Would you call me? Would you care about how I got them back? Download American Vigilante now.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery. And I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
About 6 weeks before Thanksgiving, Asmaram and Tesfu came to Winta's brother's workplace, and the brother's name is Yeferam. According to Yeferam, Asmaram told him that he had discovered something about Merhawi. Then Asmaram said, quote, "You guys have murdered Abraham, and I'm going to murder you," unquote.
Oh, uh-oh.
Yeah, that escalated quickly.
It did.
He insulted Yeferam and his family, then left when Yeferam threatened to call the police.
So he's showing up at people's workplaces, just
confronting people.
Yeah, you got
angry,
he's too far.
Blow his top. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know about anybody else black who's listening to this with black skin. Nobody cares what country you're from or what language you speak. Your skin is black. You can't be saying this stuff out loud. I'm going to murder you?
Yeah.
Do you know the smoke you are just inviting your way? Whether you can't just be saying that at work. So then about 10 days before Thanksgiving, Asmaram and Tesfu confronted Merhawi at the Oakland Library. Asmaram told Merhawi he had proof. Aha, I've got the receipts. Abraham was murdered. And that he would not expose Mahari's sexuality if he confessed he was present when Winta killed Abraham. Wow.
Okay.
So he's doing an interrogation, Law and Order style, at Thanksgiving. And then he's going to the library and is going to, like, get somebody to confess.
Yeah, that's a really weird place to confront somebody, too, at the library.
Right? Like, shh. Yeah. Sir, that is so funny.
You need to keep it down, sir.
But I have the receipts.
Wow. So according to Asmaram, Merhawi admitted that he was gay and that he had molested Isaac.
Wow.
And he begged Asmaram not to tell anyone. I don't believe anything Asmaram's saying.
I don't either. Mm-mm.
Asmaram claimed that Mirhawi admitted to Asmaram that Winta had poisoned Abraham to keep him from exposing Mirhawi's sexuality and for the insurance money.
Mm.
And that he, meaning Mirhawi, Jonas and Angusam were all there when Abraham died.
Wow. I mean, part of me is just like, Mirhawi is just like, I'm going to just say whatever this motherfucker wants me to hear.
I don't think he said any of this.
So he can leave me alone. Oh, well,
I don't think he said any of this.
Yeah. Okay. That part too. Okay. Forget everything I was going to say. I don't think this happened.
Yeah. I don't think this happened. Asmaram made it up. Yeah. But if it did, what?
I could see somebody being like, I'm just going to say whatever he wants. So he'll leave me alone. And I continue my activities in the Oakland Public Library.
Yeah, I don't think he would do that.
Oh, okay.
But only because, yeah.
I don't think he would either. I'm just saying,
if he did.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
I don't think this happened, but if it did, you know, like.
He was just saying OJ Simpson did get rid of him.
Yeah. Exactly. Glad we're on the same page. So according to Mirhawi, Asmaram called Regbi a quote unquote prostitute and said, quote, that bitch mother of yours and you guys are the ones that killed my brother. You dirty rat. You killed my brother. Ooh.
That part is not in the quote.
Oh, sorry. Beth is right. She's correct. So then 3 days later, Asmaram told Mirhawi he intended to expose Mirhawi's sexuality to his family and church, which is scary.
Yeah.
If you are concerned about being outed, if you're, you know, outing is, I just think it's so cruel.
Cruel.
And
it's not your choice to tell. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's
It should be your choice whether or not you want to come out or not.
Absolutely.
And yeah. That's cruel. And I don't know if Mirhawi is gay or not. Doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, but within their culture, it was a big deal.
And definitely a way to try to harm somebody or threaten harm to get this story, this cockamamie story to make sense for him.
Right. Exactly. So Asmaram then went to see Yefram again to tell him about Mirhawi's sexual orientation, quote, since Yefram is the older sibling, unquote. According to Asmaram, Yefram, quote, came with an attitude, unquote, and refused to speak with him. Well, gee, I wonder why, you crazy motherfucker.
Exactly. I'm sorry, your tone, I have boundaries, and your tone is violating them, so I'm out of here. That's all. Asmaram told Tewodros in November that the Mirhawi family had murdered Abraham to hide Mahari's sexuality. Tewodros was worried that Mirhawi would molest Isaac and felt that Mirhawi should not be active in the church. So these fears, just Asmaram is like a bad apple.
Yeah.
Poisoning everything.
The whole tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, this whole thing about being worried because Mirhawi is gay, that he would molest Isaac, that's just so, it's not a thing.
It's not a thing.
Pedophilia is not the same as homosexuality.
Yeah.
And most pedophiles are not gay.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. But there is so much effort by Christians, fundamentalists, evangelicals, people in the far right to conflate those two.
To conflate the two. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Surprisingly, pedophiles don't care so much about the sex of the children.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
they care more about the fact that they're children. And it's not that they're gay or straight or whatever. It's just not the same thing. It's a totally different thing.
Yeah, exactly. And conflating the two is insane.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense and is so harmful. As we see, because the outcome of this is
not good.
Not good.
Yeah, this is a true crime story, everybody. Didn't know if we don't know if we mentioned that earlier.
Wait, I'm sorry. Did you? Nobody told me this would involve murder. I'm out of here.
So Asmaram claimed that on November 20th, he sent Winta a letter with, quote, proof that her brother was a homosexual, unquote, and proposed that they hold a family discussion about it. The next day, he saw Winta at Keller Plaza.
He claimed that she admitted Mirhawi was homosexual and that he had molested Isaac. At Asmaram's urging, Winta invited him to meet with the Maharis to discuss the family's problems at Regby's apartment when they gathered for Thanksgiving.
Tuadros was not present on these occasions and never said anything derogatory to the Maharis. These occasions were Asmaram was going around and harassing everybody.
Tuadros,
didn't have anything to do with that. He never said anything derogatory about the Mahari family. Merhawi said that before the murders, he saw Tuadros as a pacifist who wouldn't hurt a fly.
Tuadros was never told he was unwelcome at the Mahari family home. And he said that he and the Mahari family, including Winta, Isaac, Angasam, Merhawi, and Jonas, continued to visit each other at their respective homes between Abraham's death and that Thanksgiving.
Tuadros later said that he was aware of, but did not share, Asmaram's suspicion that the Maharis had killed Abraham. His concerns were that an unknown outsider, possibly someone that Winta knew, might have murdered Abraham for the insurance money.
Or, you know, it could be like all those people qualified to weigh in said that he died of natural causes. He was worried, though, that Asmaram's continuing investigation could endanger the whole family. And as a precaution, the Gebre Selassies changed the locks to each of their apartments, and Tuadros bought a gun. Wow. So these people are terrified.
They're scared. Yeah.
Yeah.
The later prosecution theory was that Asmaram and Tuadros created a plan to kill their in-laws and kidnap their two-year-old nephew, Isaac. Asmaram later testified that he had practiced shooting at a range 6 or 7 times and that he made sure the gun was loaded before he went to the Mahari's house on Thanksgiving Day.
What a monster.
Yeah.
The Mahari family gathered at Regby's apartment on the afternoon of November 23rd, 2006 for Thanksgiving. Regby, Winta, Isaac, brothers Angasam, Merhawi, Jonas, and Yeferam were there.
Tuadros, who had been invited, arrived and greeted everyone in the apartment, asked Angasam about his school, spoke with Jonas about college, and commented to Winta that Isaac was growing up.
Tuadros got a plate of food and sat down. Angasam, Yeferam, and Winta were sitting on the couch across from him. Jonas was at the computer table near Winta. Merhawi was on the phone with Yosef, the oldest Mahari brother who lived in London.
Regby sat on a stool next to the phone using a small portable burner to prepare a traditional Ethiopian coffee ceremony. Tuadros was playing with 2-year-old Isaac, letting him open and shut his cell phone.
Much of what happened next was hotly disputed at trial. What is undisputed is that Asmaram arrived at the Mahari family apartment shortly after 3 p.m. armed with a 9mm semi-automatic pistol.
Angasam, Merhawi, and Yeferam all said that they saw Tuadros with Isaac, and Isaac was playing with Tuadros' phone. Later, they saw Tuadros talking on a cell phone, saying something like, "Hello, hello, I can't hear you," as he walked toward the apartment's front door, and Isaac was with him.
Yeferam said he saw Tuadros unlock both locks on the door, open it, and then he carried Isaac out of the apartment. Angasam M. Merhawi did not see Tuadros unlock or open the door. But other than Isaac, none of the Mahari family members were anywhere near the front door.
Asmaram came in holding a gun in his right hand, although some said he had 2 guns and others said he was holding a bag in his left hand. So there's a lot of confusion about what happened. And
yeah,
I totally get that when something like this happens, mm-hmm. your memory is, it's chaotic. Your memory is not clear.
Yeah, you took the word right out of my brain. Chaotic.
Yeah.
Chaos.
Chaotic,
and this was all really fast.
Yeah.
Sudden.
I mean, we're reading this story, but it happened faster than that.
Speed it up, Beth. I'm just kidding.
Yeferam later testified that Asmaram said, quote, "Everybody here killed Abraham. I'm going to kill you," unquote. But Merhawi said that Asmaram said nothing.
Asmaram shot Jonas. Then as Regby cried, "My child," and reached toward him, Asmaram shot her too. As Winta got up from the sofa, Asmaram shot her as well. Angasam escaped by jumping from the living room window. Oh my God! Yeferam grabbed Asmaram's hand and they struggled over the gun. Merhawi followed and grabbed Asmaram from behind. Asmaram backed into the hallway and fled.
Yeferam was shot in the ankle during the struggle. Regby, Jonas, and Winta were all killed. Angusum was severely injured when he jumped from the third floor apartment window to escape.
Oh my, that makes my knees hurt just thinking about a jump like that. Oh,
yeah.
Tewodros fled with Isaac to his mother's apartment. Asmaram also returned there, called 911, and reported that he had shot several people in self-defense. He begged the police to arrive quickly because people had been hurt.
Two guns were recovered from the apartment. A Lorkin 380 automatic that had been reported stolen from its registered owner, so we don't know whose gun that was, and a Luger 9mm registered to Mulugeta Gebrselassie. The Lorkin had 6 live rounds in its magazine, but the chamber was empty.
All of the fatal bullets and cartridge casings found at the scene of the shootings came from the Luger. Asmaram admitted bringing the Luger to the Mehari family apartment, but denied that he brought a second gun. Tewodros' cell phone was found next to Jonas's body.
So I think there was an argument about where the other gun came from. People were saying that Asmaram brought it, and Asmaram's claiming that it was the Mehari family's gun.
Now it's time to get into the investigation and the arrest. Hit it, Beth!
Asmaram and Tewodros were questioned by police early in the morning of November 24th. Tewodros waived his Miranda rights and spoke for about 3 hours, of which only 21 minutes were taped, which is weird.
That is weird.
He explained that he had suspected foul play was involved in Abraham's death, but, quote, kept everything inside, unquote.
He said that Regby had invited him to Thanksgiving when he ran into her and Winta the day before. On Thanksgiving, he was playing with Isaac. He heard Yeferim yelling at Asmaram. He did not know that Asmaram was coming over or who opened the door to let him in. Tewodros said that Yeferim pulled out a gun and Asmaram started shooting in the air. Tewodros heard one shot, grabbed Isaac, and then ran.
Asmaram was questioned for just over an hour, about half of which he spent talking about his belief that the Maharis killed Abraham.
Okay.
Asmaram said he was invited to Thanksgiving by Winta. Okay. Mm-hmm. But he grew suspicious. Winta told him he should come alone.
Oh my God. How does he come up with this stuff? He believed that she and her family might be planning to kill him to keep him from exposing Maharwi's sexuality and the truth about Abraham's death. So he brought his gun to the meeting to defend himself. He initially told police that Regby opened the door for him and then stood there. But he later said she sat down after letting him in. Which is it?
He did admit to the shootings. He said that Winta was evil and that the events of November 23rd happened because Mirhawi was a homosexual and that the Mehari family murdered Abraham to conceal Mirhawi's sexuality.
Wow. A stretch.
Yeah.
He said that he knew the Mehari family planned to kill him to prevent him from revealing Mirhawi's lifestyle and that Winta invited him to Thanksgiving to, quote, set him up, unquote. So now let's get into the trial. Ridiculous, but go ahead, Death.
Asmaram and Tewodros were each charged with 3 counts of murder, attempted murder, kidnapping, and false imprisonment by violence. The prosecution alleged that Tewodros helped Asmaram by signaling that the Maharis had all gathered, then let him into their apartment and left with Isaac before Asmaram opened fire.
Both Asmaram and Tewodros testified in their defense. Asmaram admitted to the shooting, but asserted it was self-defense. He claimed that the Maharis had killed Abraham to conceal Mahari's sexual orientation and that they lured him to their apartment to kill him. Tewodros' defense was that he knew nothing of Asmaram's plans and had no part in the murders at all, whatsoever. Not a me, no do, not just call me Nathan because I ain't had nothing to do with it. My name's Bennett and I ain't in it.
Angusum, Mirhawi, and Yeferim also testified at the trial. Mirhawi said that he had never owned a gun, had never seen any of his family with a gun, and none of them had a gun on the day of the murders. He denied that his family invited Asmaram over for Thanksgiving. Yeah, I don't think they would. To murder him.
Yeah.
So that he could not expose Mirhawi's sexual orientation or continue to investigate Abraham's death.
Your Honor, we don't even own a gun. What do we need a gun rack for? Yeah.
There's on, Your Honor. Over in the library yelling about Mirhawi's sexual orientation. This I think everybody knows already, okay?
Wow. Great point, friend. Great point. The prosecution theorized that Tewodros signaled Asmaram to come over to Regby's apartment by calling another brother, Dawit Gebreselassie, who was with Asmaram in their mother's apartment.
There were no calls between Tewodros and Asmaram on the day of the shooting, but records for Tewodros' phone showed two calls were placed to Dawit's number on November 23rd, one at 2:57 p.m. and the second at 3:04 p.m. The first call connected for 3 seconds. The second call went through, but the connection time was 0 seconds.
According to Tewodros, his brother Dawit's phone number was programmed into his flip phone, it could be speed dialed by pressing and holding a number for a few seconds or less. Closing the phone would end the call.
He said that it was possible that Isaac inadvertently pressed Dawit's number when he was playing with the phone. He said he did not pretend to have a phone conversation and Isaac was playing with his phone most of the time.
The truth about the Haditha massacre has been covered up, but not anymore.
I know you know what happened.
They went into houses and killed women and children.
What are you thinking?
What a mess.
U.S. Marines murdered innocent civilians in cold blood.
And at the center of it all
is 25-year-old Sergeant Frank Wooderick.
And me. Murder in House 2. A new podcast from Crowd Network.
Asmaram claimed that he was set up, that Regby led him into the apartment, and Yeferam and Mirhawi almost immediately started cursing at him, and Mirhawi threatened to knock him down. Mirhawi then drew a gun from his waistband.
Asmaram pulled out his own gun, told Mirhawi to put his weapon down, and fired a warning shot towards the window. I'm not entirely sure, but I think that he was claiming that he shot the window that the one guy jumped out of.
Oh,
or something like that.
Okay.
So there was some question about whether or not he jumped out of the window.
They coordinated that? Oh, okay.
Or that he jumped out the window.
I'm
not really sure about this part. I couldn't quite figure it out.
Okay.
But I think Asmaram was saying he didn't jump out the window. I shot the window. This is part of his story. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. Great story, Asmaram. So
everybody ducked, including Mirhawi. At that point, Asmaram saw that Yeferam also had a gun. Scared, he said, quote, "If anybody moves, I'm going to kill you," unquote. Tewodros grabbed Isaac and left. Yeferam picked up his gun.
Asmaram fired in his direction. Then everything became more chaotic than we've previously described. Mirhawi ran towards Asmaram with his gun drawn. Asmaram shot toward Mirhawi, then shot Regby as she tried to grab him. Winta then came at Asmaram screaming and saying, quote, "It's our fault! It's our fault!" unquote. He shot her too. He did not want to kill her, he said, but she was blocking his way. So,
wow. So, you know, yeah, had to do it.
Sorry, Your Honor. Wow.
Yeferam grabbed Asmaram's hand. Asmaram's gun went off. He saw that Yeferam was also holding a gun. He dropped his weapon and struggled with Yeferam, knocking the gun from his hand. The struggle continued until Asmaram distracted Yeferam by pretending he had a second gun in his waistband and managed to flee to his mother's apartment.
Huh, okay. During his testimony, Asmaram said that Winta, quote, "was the most evil wife and the most evil human being on this earth."
But he didn't mean to shoot her.
He didn't mean to shoot her. I was going to say, any chance you walked past a mirror today, Asmaram? Because that would be the most evil human being on the earth, if you ask me at this moment. And the Mehari family were the, quote, most evil family in the whole world, unquote. Whole world? Really? Come on. 8 billion people, sir. And again, any access to a mirror.
Tuadros also testified. He said that he did not tell Asmaram that he was planning to visit the Maharis, and he did not know that his brother would be there, and that Asmaram did not ask him to be there or to open the door for him.
After 3 months of trial and 6 days of jury deliberations, on May 31st, 2011, the jury found both Asmaram and Tuadros guilty on all counts. In addition to the 3 murder counts, they were convicted of 1 count of attempted murder for wounding Yeferam Mahari, 1 count of kidnapping for taking 2-year-old Isaac from the scene, and 2 counts of false imprisonment. Gosh, taking that baby Isaac might have been the one, like the one,
the
you
only
know,
thing,
glimmer
yeah.
of hope yeah. in this.
But the reason why, well, I don't know.
Uh-oh.
I don't know.
Am I off? I mean, I could be off.
No. It's good that Isaac was taken out of this scene for sure. Yeah. But if Tuadros was helping Asmaram, the reason why they took him was because they thought that Maharwi was molesting him and, you know, that whole thing.
Oh,
so,
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
They were trying okay. to take him away from his
from
family.
That.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. It just, the whole thing is fucked.
Yeah. That's a perfect word to describe it. Moving on. Yeah. Thank you.
So both were sentenced to multiple consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole. At sentencing, Asmaram Gebrselassie shook his head and smirked while the victims read their statements.
He had been removed from court several times for outbursts during the trial, and when sentencing was pronounced, he shouted at the judge, who was an Asian person, quote, "You know who is evil? You're evil. You're a criminal. Go back to Japan," unquote. Well, this guy is garbage.
Yeah, Bakuka. That's racist. Yeah,
extremely and so unnecessary. And this guy, the judge is going to hand you your sentence. So you decide, I know exactly what I'm going to do now. Insult him. Got him. Ladies and gentlemen, we got him. No, you don't, Asmaram. So now let's get into, where are they now?
Well, Tuadros appealed his case and was sent back to the Alameda County DA for a possible retrial. Instead, he pleaded no contest to 3 charges of voluntary manslaughter. And on April 4th, 2016, he was sentenced to 10 years in prison, time that he had already served, and he was set free. He was 47 years old.
Wow. And Asmaram Gebrselassie is currently incarcerated in California State Prison Solano in Vacaville, California. Come visit us in Vacaville.
In beautiful Vacaville.
Beautiful Vacaville. I don't know how you'll feel about hearing this. Asmaram is 60 years old today.
Okay.
So let's get into our takes, our spicy hot takes. Spicy. Whoa. I need some milk. Go, Beth. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is just a really sad story.
Yes. Yes, it is.
You know, I love the idea of the families all living in the same apartment complex.
Yeah, and it was so beautiful.
It was.
Picturesque.
And it's so sad that it all went so wrong. And I think the Ethiopians' conservative beliefs about LGBTQ people played a big role in this story.
Yeah.
And why being gay was conflated with pedophilia, which is wrong.
Yeah.
That's not a thing.
Nope.
So get
nope.
that out of your head.
False. Completely false. Yeah. False.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Asmaram kind of lost his goddamn mind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Tuadros conspired with Asmaram or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not completely convinced, but I wasn't at the trial. It just, you know, there's a lot of things that made me think that he did not. But if he did, I think he did, because Asmaram played up his belief that Merhawi was abusing Isaac. And I feel like Tuadros was trying to save Isaac.
Right. And Tuadros, from the way the story described him, was, what do they say? Couldn't hurt a fly. He was a really
fine. He was a pacifist.
Yeah. So I could see how his goodness or pacifism might have
wanting
been
to save
manipulated.
Isaac.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe anything that Asmaram said.
Not a word.
His story is so dumb. Yeah.
Yeah, and his story, which one? You know?
His stories.
Yeah. So many outlandish stories. And friend, by this point in the episode, have you thought of a word for two people who decide to get together and weave a wild tale and then commit murder?
The only one I know is folie à deux.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I agree. It's very sad. After somebody dies or we lose somebody, it's natural to want to blame someone or something.
Yeah.
And I imagine that there also may have been a sense of distrust by the surviving loved ones, family members, community members of the police in the United States. And so I get them saying, well, can you run it again? Do the autopsy again. Do a little more checking. But at some point, the evidence in front of you has to speak for itself. I mean, you cannot create facts that are not there, that don't exist. And Asmaram did that, and it ended horrifically. Homophobia is real, and people lose their lives over it all over the world.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, there's no place in this entire rock where queer people don't exist. We're everywhere, including in the church. Yeah. And some people use religion to support their homophobia. But, you know, I was in conversation with some women this week, and one of them was talking about their church and how their church is like a safe haven for LGBTQ people. And their church is also a place that has a women's healthcare clinic.
Oh, wow.
But there are some people in the church who are against helping people in this way. And my friend, who's the pastor, is like, but I mean, God is like awesome and loves everybody and wants us to take care of everybody. So she is having a hard time accepting that her people in the church don't see that. And she's like, you know, frustrated with how small their beliefs are making their ability to help people to really be, you know, God-like, right?
And yeah,
if God is the center of your religion and God is good, well, this homophobia and violence are not good, right? So how do you reconcile the two in your mind or in your spirit? It seems very counterintuitive to me. Limiting belief and people living and loving and being their full true selves just seems like that's what a good God would want us to do, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just so sad that what appeared to be a totally natural death, you know, none of us are getting out of this alive, right?
Right.
Death is coming for all of us. But so many other people had to die unnecessarily after.
Yeah, it's a crazy story.
It's crazy and it's so let us know what you think at Fruit Loose Pod on all the socials. And you can respond directly in the episode description box on Spotify and tell us what you think.
Mm.
So now we're going to get into how not to get murdered.
Well, if you love true crime and you don't want to die.
Just kidding. Okay. If you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you.
Wow, I don't know what happened.
That's okay. Keep it.
Sorry, everybody. This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. This is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's experiences.
All right. So this tip comes from Ashley F. in our Facebook discussion group.
Nice.
Join it. It's one of the littiest places on the internet. But thank you, Ashley, for this tip. I think Ashley should get one of these for this tip. The tip says, hey, y'all, ladies, it's fall. It's starting to get darker earlier. So make sure you fill up your gas tank before sunset. Keep an extra charger with you at all times. Signing up for AAA is a great idea.
Yes.
If you got the extra coins, check your tires and your oil. Do not go to the ATM at nighttime if you
Or early morning when it's still dark.
Yes. Yep. And if it is dark, make sure you park in a well-lit area. So funny. Old Whitey was like, you should go to the gym early in the morning. It's great there. And he was telling me where he parks. And he was like, it's well lit and it's right in front of the doors. And I was like, are you worried about getting attacked and raped? This 6'3", like 250 pound man. And he was like, no, it's just close to the, you know, I can park my car close. I was like, oh, I guess just me, though, huh? Just me worried about attacks. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, I actually stopped going to a gym because their parking lot sucked.
Yeah, that is real. You got to be safe. You got to be safe.
Yeah, and I actually talked to the managers about it, and they were like, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, it sucks. Well, sorry thanks. About that. Bye.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you got to, obviously, not everybody's thinking about our own personal safety at all times. You know, so we got to do it ourselves.
Yeah, it's a bunch of dudes. So
exactly. Yeah, dudes. Yeah. Dudes often don't have to
do better. Do better, dudes.
Thank you. Couple more tips. Only unlock your doors if you're immediately getting out of the car. You don't have all your stuff. You're not ready to go. Keep those doors locked. Pay attention to your surroundings. Heads up. Phones down. Stay safe, y'all.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Thanks, Ashley.
Great tips.
Yeah.
Now it's shout out time. Look at that. Where we shout out any content by or about any people of color or any other marginalized or underrepresented folks or any true crime goodies. I got a few. Get ready.
Okay.
Listen close.
All right.
This is a podcast recommendation for all you history lovers. I'm assuming if you've made it to this point in the podcast, you love history and you love history that is not from the white lens. There's so much history out there. So this new podcast, I don't know if it's really new, but Michael Harriet, who is one of the funniest people on Black Twitter. I've quoted some of his tweets before. He's very funny. His new show is it's Drapedomaniacs, Unshackled History with Michael Harriet. And drapedomania is the mental illness that caused enslaved people of African descent to, I don't know, want to free themselves from bondage. Anyway.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So
why would they want to do that?
I don't know. But it was a real like mental disorder in DSM.
Yeah. Like hysteria.
Exactly. And the whole point is there's been drapedomaniacs throughout history. Lots of dope people who did really cool stuff. So that is great. And he's got really great guests. I also wanted just a quick follow on the socials. This person, her name is Cyber Farida. And she like worked for the NSA. She's a Black woman. And she offers all kinds of online safety tip gems for kids. That's Cyber Farida. CyberFareedha. And then lastly, Black Cake on Hulu. Ha! It is about this West Indian woman who has this whole past life that nobody knows about, not even her kids, until after she dies.
Oh, wow.
And she tells her story on like this recording and they learn about her. And it's based on a book. Black Cake is a West Indian Caribbean cake. Usually eat at like celebrations and stuff. It's just really, really good. It's Hulu. Oprah is one of the producers. The acting is great. I love the Caribbean like background. The scenery is gorgeous. There's just so much I'm learning. And it's just a really, really wonderful show.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it's really great.
So I wanted to shout out Imperfect Paradise. It's a podcast.
Thank you.
Are you listening to it?
Yes. Fred, I talked to you about it on our Patreon. And I'm so glad you are shouting it out.
Sorry.
It is so good. Isn't it?
Remember how I got it. How I found it. Sorry about that. I stole this from Wendy.
No. It's for the people. But it's so good. Tell me what you think. Tell us about it.
So there's only a few episodes out on this People versus Karen series about a white lady who claimed that a Latinx couple tried to kidnap her children at a Michael's store.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's on par with other stories like Barbecue Becky and stuff like that. The difference being that the Latinx couple sued her.
Yep.
So it's really good. Imperfect Paradise, People versus Karen.
Yes.
And then I wanted to shout out Homicide for the Holidays.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's on Peacock. There's a new season.
Yeah.
But if you go back to, it's actually season 4, Six Slays of Christmas, season 4, episode 2. You might see somebody you recognize.
Oh my gosh. Who could it be? Oh no. You know what? I always forget TV and internet. I forever. What? Okay, so those shout outs are Drapedomaniacs, Unshackled History with Michael Harriet, wherever you get your podcast, a follow on Instagram, Cyber Farida, and also a TV program called Black Cake on Hulu, as well as Imperfect Paradise, a podcast wherever you get your podcast, The People versus Karen, and Homicide for the Holidays, ho, 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 season 4, with a couple suggestions to run it back a couple episodes. And that's it for us today. Oh, my. It has been so fun, my friend. But since that's all for today, where can the people find us in the meantime, Beth?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all of our social media. The footnotes for each episode can be found on our website. Plus, check it out for the different ways that you can support the show and become a Fruit Loops patron. You can also support us by supporting our sponsors or by giving us a 5-star review.
5 stars only, please.
5 stars only, please. Also, don't forget to subscribe.
Right. Now, this is a weekly podcast, and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there. Word, smart friend.
Okay.
Is there a word for when people get together and weave a wild ass story about other people and then decide, you know what, we should kill them?
What?
Is there a word? But that's my impression of this story. Is there a word for that?
Not that there might be a German word. Who knows?
I figured there would. And if there was, you would know it. Well, if it comes to you, you just let me know. Okay, friends? Okay.
What did you call it?
Biggity-biggity-o. Yeah. The biggity-biggity-o. That's what they call Oakland in rap songs. Oaktown or Oakland. Biggity-biggity-o. Yes. But,
yeah.
Oh, man. Well, what was I saying? I got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lambs, grams, hogs, logs, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chickens, turkeys, you name it. Did you know that, smart? No, I'm just kidding.
Smarty pants, smarty pants.
Yeah. You can't be saying this stuff out loud. I'm going to murder you.
Not good. Yeah, this is a true crime story, everybody. Don't know if we mentioned that earlier.
Wait, I'm sorry. Did you? Nobody told me this would involve murder. So, what's next?
Oh, wait. It's my turn.
Yeah. Yefram.
Merhawi. Maharis. Merhawi.
Sorry. Huh? Yefram Mahari. Ethiopia is a... Gosh, I feel like I can't hear myself. What was I saying? Come visit us in Vacaville.
In beautiful Vacaville.
Beautiful Vacaville. The tumbleweeds are just... They're so beautiful this time of year.
They're gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous, darling.
And you...
Darling.
Darling.
Our tumbleweeds.
Oh, I was going to think of something. Because the news is racist. I can't think of any. All right. I got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lambs, grams, hogs, dogs, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chickens, turkeys, you name it. All right.
All right.
Alrighty. Ta-ta. Night-night. Right. Love you. Bye. You.
Bye.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I can no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get 6,000 cash, give us each 3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home, and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com or wherever fine podcasts are found.
My name is Bill Huffman, and I am a former Cleveland news producer, and I am now the host of the podcast Who Killed? I began the show focusing on the unsolved murder of Amy Mihaljevic, and now each week I explore a different case with a focus on some of the victims who don't get the attention they deserve. I have a deep catalog of over 225 episodes, so there is a guarantee there will be something for you. Who Killed is an Evergreen Podcasts, Killer Podcasts, and Slow Burn Media production. Subscribe today wherever you get your favorite shows.